this on a mute. We'll be starting in about 1 minute. Just about 30 seconds away from beginning our presentation this evening, our coaching session. Bear with us just for a moment while we get everything set up. I did want to turn this on a few moments early so that we can make sure that everyone is connected to the video portion of the program. And we've now begun our recording. Welcome to Tuesday night and our celebration of life. We have a number of you on the telephone tonight. We welcome you. Pull out a paper and a pen. We welcome those of you who are with us on the live video cast this evening. It's so good to be in your home with you to talk about these principles. We'd like to welcome all of you who are here for the first time tonight. It's a wonderful night to be here because this is the night that we begin the six qualities of an intentional creator. We cycle through them about every 10 weeks, and tonight is the beginning of quality number one. So we're so excited to have you here. You've chosen a great night to be here as a visitor. All of those who are with us on a regular basis, we welcome you tonight as well. This is an opportunity for us to talk about those things that matter most, those things that impact our lives. At this time in history, when so many firestorms are raging around us, we want to be able to rise above them and be okay, where we can see opportunities, even when opportunity might be limited. So tonight, we're going to take on what Ogg considered to be the greatest secret of success in all ventures. In fact, the rest of the qualities, quality 2 through 6, are simply designed to assist us in doing this quality more effectively. He says, even though I have all the skills of the world, if I don't have this one, and even though I have all the skills and knowledge of the world, I'll fail. I'll fail without this one. So this is the single most important quality of all six of them. And again, the rest of them are there just to assist us in perfecting this ability. Well, some of you had the opportunity to take a glance at the new chapters in the new book, Intentional Creation. Today I Begin a New Life. I want to thank you for your input. For those of you who've requested in the last few days, I've been working on Chapter 7, and I didn't want to release anything to anyone until I had finished that, so I can send it all to you. Tomorrow is the day. If you've requested this and have not yet received it, you're going to receive all 7 of the first chapters. This takes us all the way through quality number four. 5 and 6 are written but not yet ready for release. So excited to send those to you. If you're on the line tonight and you'd like to receive those chapters, just drop me an email, book@ogmandino.com, book@ogmandino.com. We'd love to be able to share them with you. Just with your agreement to read them and send back your feedback. We've had some wonderful comments. Dave, I didn't quite understand this. Could you help me understand this a little bit better? I've even had a few English majors help me with some syntax, which has been great. My editor will appreciate the work you've done in preparation for his work on the project. So thank you. I want to start tonight by just giving you a quick overview of the six qualities so we understand the order in which we teach them. Quality one is connecting with people. Quality number two is about mental creation. How do we use our mind constructively so that we can get inspired ideas that ignite our passion? That's what happens when we're in vivid visualization. We receive inspired ideas and impressions. That's what's manifest. A tangible reality is not manifest when we're in vivid mental creation. Tangible reality is manifest when we step into quality number three, physical creation. We bring that passion And it drives our focus and our discipline and our effort and our action. And we create in this dimension, the one in which we live, that which we've seen so clearly in our mind. And that same power that it gave us the inspired idea, again, participates in the physical creation, speeding up that process, putting people on our path who can serve us and who we can serve when we are in action. And fourth, I've been having so much fun with this quality, discipline and structure. That tornado-like action that's going on in our minds that causes us to resist and resent and even be rebellious. And how do we let go of all of that and embrace the very structure required to create success? Then quality number five, finding joy in the journey. The roles we play, gratitude, time management, recognition, remuneration, finding meaning and purpose in all that we do. And lastly, self-esteem. When we get to self-esteem and we discuss the causes for challenges in our self-esteem, and then we talk about how to heal self-esteem, one of the very first places we'll look is the very topic we're going to discuss this evening. Well, I want to take you back in time. This was about 1993. 4 years prior, Ramona and I had lost most of our worldly possessions, millions of dollars, in the collapse of a real estate market in Southern California. We were building apartment buildings at the time, and it seemed like everything we touched turned to gold until about 1988. And then it just started to decay and collapse. Well, I had some dear friends who I invited to participate with me in some of those projects. And one of my closest friends, matter of fact, a person with whom we had created what turned out to be one of the top films ever on the topic of child abuse prevention, entitled Come In From the Storm. It's in 30,000 schools in the United States and Canada and Australia and New Zealand, and it's on every U.S. military base in the world and every military family services organization. This was a wonderful film project. We both had written checks for $265,000 and put it into the pool and made the film, and it was no big deal. But when the real estate market collapsed, everything became a big deal. When we sold our home in California, the majority of the equity went to pay his side of the ledger on that investment. During the previous 4 years before this date that I'm going to share with you, we had been marketing the film. And again, the lion's share of the income went to his side of the ledger. We had just enough to barely stay alive while I was writing films, film scripts, and then television commercials. Well, in about 1993, we had reached a critical point. Critical point in that I was so frustrated. He had hired an attorney, and we had been at war for 4 years. The mandate to the attorney was to make my life miserable. And this attorney was the master of miserable. I wanted to find a way to solve this problem. Well, there, Ramon and I were sitting in a seminar. The second day of the seminar, the morning session, the topic was personal accountability. During that session, the facilitator asked us to put ourselves in the shoes of another person and encouraged us to do that in a situation where we might have some challenges. Well, I had the perfect adversary for that exercise, and frankly, I didn't want to do it. I had spent 4 years justifying, defending my position. He would throw an arrow, I'd throw a spear, he'd throw a rocket, I'd throw a bomb. That's how we communicated for 4 years. But I was tired. I was just exhausted. And in that fatigue, that's not quite staying on my head tonight. In that fatigue, I listened, and for the first time, I put myself in the shoes of this I look like through his eyes. And I didn't like what I saw. It became crystal clear why he had to hire the kind of attorney that he had to hire. Because that was pretty tough. And by the time my walls were broken down, and I could understand the pain that he had experienced, which I had been totally unwilling to see to that moment in time, all I could wait was for the break at noon so that I could go make a phone call. Now, I don't think there were very many cell phones back then. And I found a payphone, and I called, and I was instructed to only communicate at this point with his attorney. So convincing this person to come to the phone was quite a challenge, but he did. Oh, what do you want? And I said, I'm going to give you the information you need to bury me. Now, we'd done audits. We had $500,000 a month running through our rental account. Not a penny was ever missing. Grateful it never crossed my mind. Even in the most difficult times. But I was about to give him the information he needed to bury me. He says, I'm listening. And I said this. I controlled every facet of our real estate development activities. Blanchard Development took the properties, put them through general plan amendments, got them approved through the cities. Jamona Construction did all of the contracting to build them. Alvarado Realty did all the rent up and management and ultimately the sale. I controlled every profit center. Now that worked great while the economy was doing well. But when the economy began to collapse, I was wearing too many hats to cover all the bases. And I fear that it cost us dearly. And then I said to him, I am so very sorry. Silence. And then he said, I've been waiting 4 years to hear you say that. The hatchet is buried. I don't want the shirt off your back. We ended the call. I went home. At the time, I was wearing my Rolex watch. Now, if you'd known me back then, you would have watched me wear it. It was kind of like this, you know. Did you see it? Here it comes again. I took it off, had it polished, put in the box, and I sent it to him with a note. The note said, you have watched me flaunt this. It's now yours. As evidence of how much I would like to mend this relationship. Just about 2 years later, his family was at our home. While on a ski trip to Utah, they stayed with us. Og speaks of this moment in scroll number 2. I'll greet this day with love in my heart. He said, with love we can melt all hearts. Liken unto the sun whose rays soften the coldest clay. He did not give us a time frame. He just said it's possible. And the probability of it happening is in direct proportion to our willingness to catch the secret. The connection is not about us. It never was about us. It's always about others. Can we see a situation through their eyes? Can we listen to understand versus listening to wait for them to have that first breath and jump in with our response? Can we listen to understand till they know that we know where they are? We understand. And we're not here to fix them. We are a safe place. I know from an intensely personal and painful experience that that's a true principle. I remember reading it and going, I know that place. He says that love is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. Muscle can split a shield and even destroy life. I know what it feels like to play the muscle piece. But he said only love, this agape love, this heightened level of awareness, can open the hearts of men. And until we master this art, we are no more than a peddler in the marketplace. You ever felt like one of those? A peddler? Selling your goods? You might as well have pans tinkling on the sides of your body as you're walking around. A peddler. Snake oil or whatever it might be we feel. A peddler. He says, I will make this, speaking of love, my greatest weapon. And none on whom I call can defend against its force. Those are very powerful words. Now, when Og wrote that scroll, he wrote it along with all of the others in one sitting, in one night, all 10. This is the only one Betty made him amend, because it was a little bit more complex when he wrote it the first time. He understood. The Greeks had 4 words for love. They had Eros, which was erotic love. They had Pia, which was maternal love. They had Philo, which is brotherly love. And then Agape. Agape. A heightened level of awareness. The ability to step back and see someone, very literally in the translation, the way God would see them. Unconditional. Without judgment. He did make the amendment. I think it's wise for us in our day to understand the difference between just love, even warm and fuzzy love. Because agape love sometimes isn't warm and fuzzy. We may step into someone's world and with a heightened level of awareness discover, in fact, that we're dealing with a rattlesnake. We don't put rattlesnakes in our sleeping bags. If we do, when we climb in, they bite us. That's what rattlesnakes do. It's awareness so that we can appropriately respond to someone, appropriately, with clarity and with accuracy. Well, we sometimes, in this process, say, well, where do I fit in? When is it my turn? And many of us can start to do that exercise where we're peeling away the layers of an onion, trying to find out who we really are, and we go down this very dark hole that gets more and more dense until the sunlight of success can no longer be found. We don't find ourselves looking inside ourselves. Some of us can do that exercise that I did, which was try to find it in material things. It wasn't there. I was my things, but when my things were gone, I was gone too. So it's not a material things. We find ourselves by stepping into the world of another person and serving them. It is my hope that by the time we finish this evening's discussion, you'll have a better understanding of why your self-esteem heals when you focus on listening to others, showing up and serving them. Well, let's go to work. There are some basic principles to understand. The first one is that we all have a wall of resistance. Og talks about this in Scroll 2. He talks about that wall of hate and suspicion which they built around their hearts. He said, I'll tear down that wall of hate and suspicion and I'll build a bridge so that my love, my awareness, can enter their soul. That's a very powerful word. Well, everybody's got this wall. We have it. Just reflect for a moment. When you've had a long day and you're sitting down to have dinner and you have friends or family gathered around, and all of a sudden you get a phone call from someone who wants to sell you something right in the middle of dinner. How much cooperation do you give them? Do you ever say, take me off your list? That's about all they get. We all have a wall. Yet, we have a tendency to want to break that down, that wall down with either force, big sledgehammer, or in our excitement, we throw up all over it. Blah, blah. And it splashes back on us. Tastes terrible. It's called rejection. Just know that when we're feeling that rejection, it's not about us. It's about a wall. We were talking to a wall. That person was behind the wall. We never got to the person. We threw up on the wall, splashed back, and it feels and tastes terrible. So the very first thing we're going to want to do is learn how to take down this wall. To take it down, it's very simple. We must become a safe place where there is no need for a wall. We don't get to shortcut this process. We don't get to be frustrated that people have walls. We don't get to use clever sales techniques. Those are just sledgehammers that we smash on walls. Or we can tear down walls with a sledgehammer. We can drain the life out of people. But if we want to open their hearts, then we're going to want to use our agape love to do so. So let us just first recognize tonight, everybody's got a wall. And when you're walking around this week, and even if you've been through this process a few times, this could be the week where you actually do this at an extremely high level. Just know that everybody has a wall. No matter how urgent it is for you to tell your story, no matter how urgent or excited you are about what you're doing, they've got a wall. Dr. Hartman, who did the mathematics for our assessment, was able to measure this. He measured that on average, just on average, in a non-adversarial relationship, that's basically between committed companions or dear friends, even then, on average, a person holds back 40% of their cooperation and productivity until they feel intrinsically valued as a human being, understood and appreciated. Now, if we have any employers out there tonight, I want to smile and invite you to give us a call and let us talk about how to take down this wall and access this 40% reserve of cooperation and productivity. In the workplace today, it's not categorical, but it's very pandemic is widespread. We've just sucked the humanity out of employees. They become assets and resources instead of human beings. And so we don't get their innovation. We don't get their genius. They show up and do just enough not to get fired, and we often pay them just enough so that they don't quit. Let us learn as employers how to take down these walls of resistance and capture the hearts of the people, the human beings who work for us. If we have a committed companion, let us tonight reflect on how we can when we meet one another. Wake up in the morning when we come home from work, or we join each other for whatever it might be, or on a date. There's a wall. Can we care enough to step into that person's world to create a safe enough place for that wall to come down? What I do know is when we do, there is something really precious in our relationships. Unspeakable. So we have a wall. What do we do to take it down? I was just checking the clock to make sure I don't go over tonight. Thank you for being with us tonight. It's so good. Where we're going to talk about something now that is pretty tender. I've chosen to be pretty vulnerable, transparent, so that you might be able to feel safe in whatever circumstance you're in, whatever that might be, so that you can understand the tools with which we take down this wall of resistance. The tools are called empathy and intuition. Empathy is born out of our own life experiences. Intuition is that inner sense of knowing. And sometimes we can trust our intuition and sometimes we can't. It'll feel strong either way, but sometimes the thought processes that are driving it are not balanced. Just take a note, write down these six measurements and check them out in your assessment. The first is empathetic. Empathetic. Can we see the pricelessness in a person? The second is respectful. When we see the outer appearance of the person, can we see it appropriately and acknowledge things appropriately? Then accepting. What about their belief systems? Then we go to tolerant. What happens if their belief systems are different? Just and fair. What happens if they're underperforming? And lastly, compassionate, compassion. Can we suffer with them? Can we see a person's pain? Now, for most of you, you're going to find these measurements to be quite balanced. This is a great strength. You'll notice in your assessment other thought processes that may rob you and everyone else of these gifts. But we'll start here with what most likely is your greatest strength. So let's talk first about empathy. Ramona, who is sitting right next to me, with me, Ramona, would you just stick your head in here and say hi to everybody tonight?
Hi, everybody.
Isn't she beautiful? Ramona and I were in Chicago, and I was going to be speaking the next morning, and I was going to speak on the topic of self-esteem. I was very concerned about what was happening in the lives of some of these folks. I had the opportunity of assessing nearly 200 of the people who were present, about 700 people present. And I went to bed pondering what I would say in the morning. I woke up about 3 o'clock from a very vivid dream. I'm going to share it with you, at least abbreviated version of it tonight, for you to reflect on how this applies to you in your life. In this dream, I'm walking along a path, and there's a man walking toward me. And I became very aware that I wanted to connect with this person. And so I was reflecting on all of the principles of intrinsic validation that we'll be talking about tonight and next week. And I started reflecting on them. I'm going to want to find the good. I'm going to verbalize. I'm going to listen for doors, create a safe place, all those techniques, if you will. And I was very aware of the fact that I was dragging a very large white muslin sack. It was so big it was dragging on the ground. And I'm holding on to it like this, and I'm dragging it. Oh, it was exhausting. I was trying to find the energy to connect with this person. And then this voice said to me, "Let go of the sack." I let go. I stood up straight. Oh, what a relief. And then the voice said to me, "Turn around and face the sack." So I turned around. And I looked at it. I didn't want to, but I did. Then I was asked to empty the sack. I didn't want to, but I did. Then I was asked to look at these silver orbs that had spikes on them, a pile of them. I was asked to pick up the most painful of all of these experiences. And I knew which one it was. I think at the time I was about 52 years old. This had been haunting me for 48 to 50 years. I'd never wanted to look at it. I'd always wanted it in a sack behind me where I didn't have to see it. I think I couldn't let it go. It was part of my life, but I wanted to drag it behind me. I didn't want to look at it. I didn't want to face it. I wanted to be someone else, somewhere else, doing something different. I did not want this to be part of my life. Pause for a moment and consider what's in your sack. How are your finances doing? Anybody lost a home? Anybody lost a car? Anybody lost a child? Does this move your heart to watch what's happening in Japan right now? Our prayers just go out to them. Such pain. Have you experienced something devastating in your life? I was talking to a wonderful person the other day who had worked for a company for 22 years and was let go. Now what? Something happened in your childhood? Have you had a bad relationship? Lost a relationship? Ever felt unworthy or inadequate or ugly? What are you dragging in your sack? Now, some things may be hard to look at. Matter of fact, some of the things in your sack may require some therapeutic intervention and be okay. Some of them are so traumatic, so painful, that you'll need the help of a professional to guide you through them. I'm a coach, not a therapist. I'll give you an idea tonight, and if you can do this, then you'll be okay without a therapist. If not, you'll want to seek one. But tonight, let us finally choose to empty that sack and take a look. The price that we're paying to drag this around. Well, I knew what mine was. Ages 2 through 4, I was in Chicago with my parents, the very city where I was going to speak the next morning. My father was going to school during the day and working most of the night. My mother was working in a high rise. That was difficult for her. She grew up in Amalga, Utah. We joke that it's not the end of the earth, but if you stood on the roof, you could see it, the end of the earth, that is. And all of a sudden, she's in these high-rise and bustling neighborhoods, and what a strange place. And there was this man and woman who could not have children who befriended them. And, oh, they just poured out their love on us, and my parents were so happy. And felt, I'm sure, just like a godsend for have this couple in their life. Bought gifts and clothing for us. They couldn't afford to buy us anything. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment. We cooked with a popcorn popper. A bed came out of the wall. A Murphy bed. That's what we slept on. We barely were scraping by. I don't remember. I was 2 to 4. But to have this couple... Christmas was incredible. Santa Claus came. Challenge. They were pedophiles. This was not a good way to start childhood. And I'm looking at this, holding it. I was instructed not to relive the experience, but to focus on the pain that is caused, the sense of aloneness, the sense of loss, the confusion, those critical building blocks. I only share that with you so that you can have courage to look at whatever yours is. Just look at it. Do you feel abandoned? Alone? Like you don't have energy to do it again? What might be happening for you as you're feeling this? Because in the dream, I was asked to do something that was seemed very strange. I was asked to take this orb with these sharp spikes on it and hold it against my chest and then press it into my heart till it was engraved in my heart. Oddly, it didn't hurt. There was a tremendous sense of relief that came. It didn't make sense at the time. Then I was asked to pick up the next, so I picked up the next and do likewise. And then the next, I had quite a pile. And the next. And soon, the pile was gone, and they were all inside my heart. My heart had to expand to hold them. And I remember feeling such peace. And then I was asked to turn around. And as I turned back around, I understood. For the first time, I noticed that the man who had approached and was standing in front of me was also dragging a sack. I couldn't see his while I was dragging mine. There was too much energy and focus on my stuff. I couldn't even see that he had stuff. I knew it was in a sack. I just knew. Somehow I knew. I knew the questions to ask. Until he knew that I knew where he was. Finally, somebody understands what I'm going through. I shared that story with Kevin Hall, who was my coach. Wrote the book Aspire, just an amazing human being. And he said, stop. When I was talking about engraving that on my heart, he said, do you understand what that means? And I said, I don't know what it means, but I know how it felt. He said, to engrave something on our heart means our character. Our character. See, one of the first steps in healing our self-esteem is to own our life. Choose us. And we grave it on our heart. We then get to ask ourselves this question. I wonder if. Which means, I wonder if anyone else is having a similar experience. And we go from our pile to them. Oh, what are they experiencing? We become curious. Instead of dragging this burden behind us, these experiences become a rich resource. Because our character, was forged in the furnace of adversity. We know what pain feels like. We can't take it back. But when we choose to use this rich resource, which we now own, graved in our heart, we use this as a rich resource to connect with another person, to better understand what they're experiencing. There is finally purpose in our suffering. Now, I'm not suggesting we have those experiences so that we can do this. We've had that experience. We can't take it back. We can either drag it around as a victim, wanting people to feel sorry for us, and we feeling sorry for ourselves, or we get to wear it in our hearts as a rich resource. Better understand what another person might be experiencing. Now with tenderness, I want us to reflect on the moment when we choose to engrave it. We could have a thought process that's asking, but Dave, if I engrave this in my heart, and I focus on the needs of other people, how will anybody ever know how much I've suffered? How will they know how much I've sacrificed and all the pain I've gone through? How will they ever know? Here is a great truth. Painful to hear, but true. They almost everyone is focused on their own sack they're dragging. They only care that you notice theirs. Is this a sacrifice? I submit to you, not at all. It is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. When we stop dragging our sack, engrave it in our heart, and show up to better understand another person, that is the secret that we've stepped outside of our world and we're showing up, stepping into the world of others, because when their walls come down, the cooperation and productivity they're holding back is poured out to us. Ultimately, we're the beneficiary. We wouldn't want to tell people about our story. We want them to know that we know where they are, and we've created a safe place for them. Now, there is a time when we share our story. We won't get to that till next week. Step number 7, gaining agreement. But when we're initially connecting with another person, it is not about us. It is about them. Can we care enough about another person to, first of all, let go of this so that we don't suck the energy out of everyone we come in contact with, engrave it in our heart, and stand tall and prepared to connect and show up for them? Can we do this? That's empathy. It could be all those experiences, as painful as they've been. They are, not could be. They are our greatest asset. Our greatest asset. Ponder this question with me. In what ways have you been uniquely qualified and prepared for this moment in time? What Gethsemanes have you experienced? Have you, before this moment, viewed this as a gift? Again, we don't get to take it back. It's happened. And we can write it on a rock and throw it out in the ocean, but it will get washed back up on the shores of memory. We don't get to let go of the memory. But we can use the memory of what it felt like as a rich resource to bless the lives of another person. I'm spending just a little extra time on this one tonight because I just feel so impressed to do so. I can just feel somebody struggling with this, saying, Dave, but how do I do this? What does it mean to own it, to engrave it on my heart? Just reflect on that question. I wonder if anyone else is having this experience, because you know what it feels like. You could understand better than anyone else what they're going through. And when you show up and you use your empathy to guide your listening and questioning till they know that you know, you were just allowed in their world. You're a safe place. We're not safe as victims. We're not safe. We're not safe when we throw up on people's walls. We're not safe when we try to tear it down with a sledgehammer. We are only safe when someone goes, oh, finally, someone understands where I am, and I don't feel threatened. There's not a sales pitch coming in the next second. They're not doing this as an ulterior motive. They're not just going through a rapport cycle in a sales cycle. They actually care about me enough to know. Chapter 2 of the book is entitled The Rules of Change, and the first rule that's changed is that if we want to to connect with people, we must be willing to step into their world and use our empathy and balanced intuition, that inner sense of knowing that can guide our questions. Because major decisions in this economic climate are made in that space. That's where it's made. There isn't money just to waste on a binge. We're going to want to do this. So ask yourself, is there anyone who might be struggling with something similar to this? I'm going to walk you through now a few of the first principles of intrinsic validation. What that means, intrinsic, is that deep worth. It's validating my worth, me validating your worth, you validating someone else's worth. And the way we validate it, the greatest gift we give, is that we listen. We listen. Now, the first stage of this process is to start noticing other people. That's getting us outside of our wall. It's a preparatory stage. And the first is to begin noticing what's important to other people. Can we notice what's important to them? It's important to emphasize these aren't things that are important to us. They most likely won't be important to us. I've often shared a story because I don't have any tattoos, and frankly, I don't really care to have one. And I've had some judgment around that issue. And I can think of two occasions. One I've talked less about. It was about two Christmases ago. Her daughter Cindy and her husband Chris and Ramona and I were coming back from a restaurant to go to a Christmas concert downtown Salt Lake, so we took a taxi. And on the way, we climbed the taxi, and our taxi cab driver was a wonderful woman from West Virginia. Her head was almost flat top with kind of a mullet, and she had a tattoo right here on her forearm. And that's how she held the steering wheel with her right hand. A tattoo right here. Well, I've become increasingly curious about tattoos and what it means to someone. I don't want one. They're not important to me. But I want to know how important this was to her. This is about her. I said, can you tell us about your tattoo? And she lit up. A matter of fact, it was so powerful. Our daughter told this story again at Christmas, on Christmas morning. She remembered it as we were talking about some of our favorite moments around Christmas. This woman began to tell us that she had come from West Virginia out to Salt Lake because she wanted to do some skiing. And she had been attached at the hip to her brother. So before she left West Virginia, she had a tattoo put right here on her arm that represented her brother. She shared these different symbols. And then she touched it gently like this. And said, this way, my brother is with me every day. Did her walls come down? Did her cooperation and productivity flood out to us in a miraculous way? Can we notice? Or are we so consumed with what people are noticing about us? Do they see my new shoes? Do they like my new suit? Do they like my tie? How about my hairdo? Do they think I'm too fat or too tall or too skinny or too bald or too something? All that dialogue going on about ourselves. Can we get past all of that and focus on them? Can we see what's important to them? And second principle, can we verbalize it? Verbalize it. Actually say it. We see much more than we actually speak. Now, to help you with this, I'm going to have you play a game this week. That game is called Red Flags, Green Flags, or Green Flags, Red Flags. Now, a green flag is something that's important to someone or something good that they've done. A red flag is something that we might feel judgment around or that we may dislike. Now, if you've got teenagers, this is going to be a really fun game to play, because for the next week, I'm going to challenge you to look just for the green flags. So all you you get to look at. You see a red flag, you just ignore it. You might have to bite your tongue like this. But you want to ignore the red flags. You walk into a child's bedroom, they just cleaned it, there's one sock out of place. Maybe in the past we would have mentioned the sock. This week we mention the good things that were done in the room. We notice only the good, that which is important to someone else. I've had so many occasions recently where coaching clients have played this game and the response is almost always the same. I had fun for the first couple of days. What happened after that? There's just so much red! Because we're so conditioned to looking for it. Og gives us an extremely powerful scroll. In scroll 2, he tells us in that scroll that when we meet someone silently and to ourselves, we want to make sure that's the way we do it, silently and to ourselves, we say, I love you. Our facial expressions change. The tone of our voice changes. We'll talk more about mirror neurons at another time. But that puts someone at ease because our thought processes do leak out on our face. We have 200 different muscles on our face. The math is 2 to the power of 200 minus 1. That is literally billions of different facial expressions and combinations. A person's mirror neurons, which are found in their amygdala, their fight or flight center, can pick up on every one of them and read them accurately. Before we have conscious thought, chemicals are already being released in our body. If we show up with judgment and we're trying to act like we aren't judging, it leaks out on our face. People know. We know when people are judging us. We can tell. They can tell when we are. So as you're reading the scroll this week, which is your assignment, scroll number 2, I'll greet this day with love in my heart. Every time you meet a new person, say silently into yourself, I love you. Reach out, shake their hand, and see how differently you feel about them. I remember the first time I did this, reluctantly, fighting it. What I discovered, you may discover too. I was judging everyone I met. Sad to say, but I was. I still can if I don't do this. Ramona knows this. We had an experience just about a week ago where I was feeling some of that energy. She said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to say in my heart, I love you. My energy shifted. The energy I was feeling was not from the person. It was from me. Silent to myself, I love you. So play red flags, green flags for a week and see if you can discover whether or not you've been focusing more on the red flags than the green flags. Okay, now we're going up the stakes. Those are two preparatory principles. We start noticing people. We start verbalizing what we notice. And what we notice is what's good about them or what's important to them. Everybody loves to hear those things. I was in a session this morning with a doctor who paid me a compliment in a way that was really tender to hear. I got off the phone and I talked to Ramona about it. It was so affirming and frankly needed this morning. We all need to hear these things. Let us be the one who sees it and speaks it. Now the second one, third principle for the second stage. We're going to move from noticing and verbalizing to actually caring. Not just noticing, but caring. Daniel Goleman, in his book, Primal Leadership, and again in Social Intelligence, tells us that we are built to connect. We are built to connect. The psychoanalysts are actually taught. Viktor Frankl talks about this in Man's Search for Meaning. They're taught to feel what their clients are feeling. Because if they can actually have the feeling, they know better what to prescribe. We don't need to be psychoanalysts, but we can be empathetic. We can start caring about a person and listening differently. And we start with principle number three, listening for doors. This is your second assignment, is to listen for doors. You're standing in front of someone's wall. You don't want to take it down with a sledgehammer. You don't want to throw up on it. You're listening for a door so that you could walk in. And people are constantly telescoping little hints about what's going on behind that wall. It could be as simple as, oh, I had a rough night last night, or I didn't sleep well, or my kids are sick, or my boss is driving me crazy, or if it's a child, I hate my English teacher. And sometimes we want to say, oh, son, they have so many children, it's no wonder they're having trouble, or, well, I'm tired too, or my children didn't sleep either. We just blast right in with our story. This week, we're going to listen. We're going to listen for those little verbal hints. And when we hear one, we're going to say something simple like, well, tell me more about that. Those of you watching on the video, those on the phone, I'm leaning forward. Tell me more about that. Or, I'm listening. Or, share with me your experience. We're saying, I care enough about you to invest a few moments to hear where you are. This is a great principle. When was the last time someone cared enough about you to step into your world and listen? It is so rare that making this one decision separates you from almost everyone in society. Almost everyone. We care. Share with me what you're thinking. And we step into their world. Now, some of those doors can be toxic statements, hurtful statements. How could you ever be involved in something like that? What made you think that would work? Or all kinds of statements people can make. Now, what do we want to say in response? We want to defend and justify. Remember my story at the beginning? Arrow, spear, rocket, bomb. Remember that time? These are just doors. They're just doors. It took me 4 years to hear the door. That's all I wanted to hear you say. That's all. We listened for a door. Share with me what you're thinking. Once inside, we're going to begin principle four tonight, but we're going to wrap this up in a moment. Principle four is we begin to create a safe place. A couple landmines to watch this week. When someone starts telling their story, we're going to be tempted to tell ours. This isn't where we tell it. We're in their world. If we get tempted to tell a story because it's so exciting, oh, it's so amazing, it's like grabbing them by the nape of the neck, yanking them out of their world, over the bridge, into our world, putting them on a workbench, tell them our story, grab them by the nape of the neck, yank them out the door, over the bridge, into the world, sit them down and say, okay, now continue telling me your story. We might get away with one of those, but we won't get away with two of them. Let us stay in their world. If we know what they're experiencing, don't say, oh, I know what's going on, or I know how you feel. If we know how they feel, we'll know the question to ask. And if we don't know the question to ask, then we will want to listen until we understand where they are. Because if we understand, we'll be able to draw on a life experience that will guide us to a question. When that happened, were you losing a lot of sleep? When you first did that, were you so excited you couldn't sleep? How much money did you imagine yourself making that first year? What happened when it didn't work out that way? Have you ever felt like you let your family down? Where do these questions come from? From our life experience in a similar experience. So that's the assignment this week. find out what's in your sack? What are you dragging? Your character has been forged in the furnace of adversity. You know what pain feels like. You cannot take back the past, but you can use it to serve another. And when you do, you can create a safe place and walls come down and cooperation and productivity floods out to you. You're the beneficiary. They win, and you win, and connection begins. Study scroll number 2. I'll greet this day with love in my heart. Silent to ourselves, we'll say, I love you. And begin the process of looking for what's important and verbalizing it. Listening for doors, and then creating that safe place. We'll spend more time next week on that safe place, because there are some parameters that we're going to want to learn so that we don't end up in endless conversations. There are ways to narrow context and conversation to avoid some of those landmines. I'll share those with you next week. And then I'm going to show you how to try on their dream before you give them any advice, to see how it feels and fits. And then determine the right time, and if it is, to gain agreement and to share. How can you build a relationship in a sales environment, in a personal and loving relationship? We'll be discussing that as we continue this next week. This is the greatest secret of success in all ventures. It's not about us. It's about them. And when we make it about them, we do not lose anything. We, in fact, finally find ourselves while serving them. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week. Excited to have you back next week as we go through the second half of the principles of intrinsic validation and we master connecting with people. Good night, everyone.